The Truth News Network. In a world gone nuts with panic, mis, and disinformation, the deep state insisting on personal quarantine, a shutdown economy, and elections on the way, you need a voice, a calm voice, and some perspective. That voice is named Newman. From the Truth News Network, step up and hear Dan Newman.
Well, we have the truth, and we have perspective. Perspective is me, Dan Newman. I know, I said no podcast until Monday morning, and I'm welching on that. We're here because there's something very, very important. Additionally, it's Saturday. Normally, our bullet points where you catch up on all the headlines from the previous week. Something big really happened, and there is no doubt we need to address it today. And the title of our story and podcast today is, What Color is Racism? This whole racism thing, I got to be honest with you, it's getting out of hand. Politicians have normalized the practice of pandering to people of one race or another, changing their tune to say what they think the specific crowd to whom they're speaking will consider being good for those of their ethnicity. In doing this, they seem to forget one thing. That practice in itself is racist by definition. The presumptive Democrat nominee for president, former Vice President Joe Biden, slipped a bit at the end of a radio interview with an African-American host. As that interview was concluding, Biden became a bit testy, and in doing so, he slipped a bit. He may have shown something he'd prefer the world not know. Appearing on the syndicated program The Breakfast Club, the Democratic presidential nominee told co-host Leonard McElvey, known professionally as Charlemagne the God, that there were multiple black women on his short list for vice president. Biden has pledged that he will select a woman to be his running mate. The conversation was initially for Biden to defend his record of helping African Americans in advancing civil rights and voting rights. As the interview was ending, however, Biden concluded by telling the black radio host that if he can't decide whether to vote for Biden or Trump, then he, quote, ain't black. Listen for yourself.
Well, you know, thanks so much. That's really our time. I apologize.
You can't do that to black media.
I can't do that to white media and black media because my wife has to go on at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Oh, I'm in trouble.
Listen, you got to come see us when you come to New York, VP Biden.
I will.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions, but I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black.
It don't have nothing to do with Trump. It has to do with the fact I want something for my community. I would love to see
you. Take a look at my record, man. I extended the voting rights 25 years.
You heard it. Straight from the former vice president's lips. You ain't black enough if you don't agree that he is a better candidate for the black community than Donald Trump. Well, the African-American community on Friday just went nuts in response. And not just the African-American community, but many of any colors, many ethnicities from the civil rights community. Who is out there that could explain the problem that minority community members have with what the vice president said? Nobody better than South Carolina Senator Tim Scott.
That is the most arrogant, condescending comment I've heard in a very long time, and that's saying something. The man who sponsored and led the charge on the 1990s crime bill that locked up more African-American males than any other piece of legislation, and President Trump comes along and through his criminal justice reform corrects the absolute mistakes made by Joe Biden. For him to make such an arrogant, ridiculous comment to, if you think about the numbers, 1.3 million African-Americans voted for Trump. He's saying to 1.3 million African-Americans that you're not black? Who in the heck does he think he is? That is the most arrogant, outrageous comment I've heard in a very long time. And I take offense to that.
For those of you that have followed the career of Tim Scott, you know to hear him say something like that in that negative of fashion, it's very, very unusual. In fact, I've never heard him say anything like that in that tone of voice, that demonstrative than he did there. So why don't we just do this? for the rest of this podcast today, let's just get the facts. Democrats claim that they have always supported equal rights for black Americans and that Republicans are racist, who always oppose them. Both claims are flat-out lies. From its founding in 1854, the Republican Party led the fight to end slavery and then eradicate the racist Jim Crow system that held blacks down right up to securing the passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Democrats opposed the Republicans at every turn. So let's take an honest look at the history of civil rights in America. On the legislative level, congressional Republicans proposed and Democrats opposed a series of Reconstruction-era laws intended to elevate blacks in particular to force southern states to enforce the constitutional amendments extending full civil rights and voting rights to blacks. These included the Civil Rights Act of 1866, the Reconstruction Act of 1867, the Enforcement Act of 1870, the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871, and the Civil Rights Act of 1875. Democrats consistently opposed legislative efforts to confer voting rights and other civil rights on blacks, including the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution, and even the 19th Amendment, which granted women the right to vote. Here are the facts. April 8th, 1864, the 13th Amendment banning slavery passed the U.S. Senate 38-6 with 100% Republican support amid massive Democratic opposition. January 31, 1865, the 13th Amendment banning slavery passed the U.S. House by a vote of 119-56 with 8 abstentions, with all 103 Republicans voting yes, along with 16 Democrats. Republican President Abraham Lincoln signed it, sent it on to the states with final ratification December 18th of 1865. March 27, 1866, Democrat President Andrew Johnson vetoed a bill granting citizenship to blacks. June 8, 1866, the U.S. Senate passed the Republicans' 14th Amendment, which guaranteed due process and equal protection of the law to all citizens. Nearly all Republicans voted yes. 100% of Democrats voted no. June 13, 1866, the U.S. House passed the U.S. Senate's version of the Republican-sponsored 14th Amendment by a vote of 120-32. Every Republican voted yes. January 10, 1878, U.S. Senator Aaron Sargent, Republican of California, introduced the Susan B. Anthony Amendment for Women's Suffrage. The Democrat-controlled Senate defeated it repeatedly before the election of a Republican House and Senate that guaranteed its approval in 1919. February 8, 1894, the Democrat Congress and Democrat President Grover Cleveland joined in repealing the Republicans' Enforcement Act, which had enabled blacks to vote. May 6, 1960, Republican President Dwight Eisenhower signed the Civil Rights Act of 1960, expanding protections for blacks in voting. In the House, the measure was approved by 89% of Republicans, 52% of Democrats. After a Democrat filibuster, the Senate approved it 71-18. No Republicans opposed. All 18 no votes were from Democrats. A history of shame. The Democratic Party's militant arm following the Civil War was the KKK. I know. I said Democratic Party's militant arm. Did you know the Democrat Party founded the Ku Klux Klan, of which prominent Democratic West Virginia Senator Robert Byrd was a high official, as was Hugo Black, a Democrat. The latter became a U.S. Supreme Court justice. For 88 years, Democrats in the South enforced a vicious Jim Crow system of outright discrimination against blacks, particularly measures aimed at preventing them from voting. They opposed Republican-sponsored civil rights legislation at the state and federal levels. In 1964, a Republican U.S. Senate majority introduced and passed the Civil Rights Act, despite a filibuster by Democratic senators. They don't talk about that. Similarly, Republicans led the fight for the Voting Rights Act of 1965, when 94% of GOP lawmakers in the House voted for it, while 27% of Democrat House members opposed it. Today, Democrats would like us to forget that they were the party of Jim Crow, the Klan, and racist such as Woodrow Wilson, the globally thinking progressive who, upon taking office as president, promptly segregated the U.S. Civil Service and instituted policies designed to discriminate against blacks and other minorities. Democrats defended tooth and nail a plantation-style racial spoil system right up to 1964, and then converted it into a federal version with welfare policies that destroyed the black family and institutionalized dependence on government. To this day, the party promotes destructive, addictive welfare policies that keep its constituents dependent. In summary, folks, do you realize that 300,000 white men died voluntarily to set blacks free from slavery during the Civil War? 300,000. I mention that for only one reason. Racism has no color. It never has. What's tragic is that in the political world, we have allowed the use of the weaponization of racism for political purposes. Instead of confronting such cases and making public examples of such for our kids and grandkids, we sit quietly, shaking our heads. Shaking our leaders won't do anything. But there's always someone who, in such a conversation, feels compelled to correct statements like mine above. And those buts come from white and African American experts on race. I'm no expert. I'm just an old white guy from South Louisiana who grew up in a little small town where we lived racially blended, believe it or not. If you listen to those that talk about states that are entirely racist and always have been, they just wipe across the state of Louisiana with that same brush. We had no white plus black schools. We just went to school. We participated in sports. We sang in choir, joined the debate teams, and for the most part, race seldom was a big deal. I discovered real racism when I moved to North Louisiana in 1970, right in the middle of school desegregation. That's when I discovered real racism. I hate it. But more than that, I hate the fact that so many try to find ways to use it for personal and political benefit. Yes, it's a human thing to try and make oneself seem superior to others. That applies to much more than race, but that's a story for another day. A wise teacher in high school once told me, insecure people feel compelled to make themselves look better, but do it by putting others down. Is that part of racism? Again, I'm no expert, but it seems to me that is a huge part of this problem. So can we, and if we can, how can we end this? Again, the answer to that is way above my pay grade. I can only deal with myself and those with whom I interact. I would never say to a person of color, I know how you feel. I think that in itself is racist. I hate when I hear a minority American blast white people saying, you cannot know how we feel. That's impossible. Only African Americans understand. You know what? That's true to a point. But we should treat that the same way we treat many such characterizations of non-racial issues. I don't need to know how it feels to drive a car off a cliff to know the results at the end of all of that are going to be bad. I don't need to know how it feels to have my legs ripped off by a great white shark either to know the outcome is probably going to mean death. How should we deal with racism personally? Boy, that's a $1 million question. And I wish I had a $1 million answer. Let me just explain a little bit. I have racially blended family members who I love, I adore. They are no less or no more in any way than am I or any of our other family members. But I accept there are things in their lives that I can never understand, just as I have things they can never understand. Why? Because we all are different. Racism ends when we choose to even consider that we know what they feel about certain things. If we can do that one person at a time, we will quickly move far down the road to handling racism. I doubt, and I hate to say this, but I doubt we can ever eradicate it, racism. But what we can do is teach others in our circles of influence how to stop looking at those of different races with any perspective other than that of being fellow humans. Yes, they're different. But you know what? So are we. Adopting this practice is not specific to people of one or two or three or four different races. It applies to everyone. Am I so naive as to believe what I've said will be heard and adopted by many people or any people? Absolutely not. We all struggle throughout our lives with finding and doing the right things. For me, this is one of those. What I do know is that if we all, or even most of us, adopt that thought process, a world of social problems will melt away fairly quickly, too. Along with that melting would come the dissolution of social barriers which human nature dictates that we erect and keep in place to maintain distance between ourselves and others. The racial trust would begin to be adopted, slowly, but as results appear, it's going to happen. And to determine where someone is in a paradoxical dilemma, just listen to them. Listen to what they say. After all, according to the Bible, the mouth speaketh from the abundance of the heart. That includes presidential candidates, every other politician, and every other American, no matter race, creed, or even social standing. It all begins, folks, with the determination of what's in our hearts, and is it good enough, and do we need to change it? I know. We broke from our normal Saturday routine, no Saturday bullet points. But this came up yesterday on Friday, and I thought it was very important that we have this conversation while thinking and listening is fresh about that one incident that occurred. Hey, listen, this is a special weekend. This is Memorial Day weekend. Don't forget that we honor those people, some of those in the Civil War that we just spoke of, that gave their lives to take care of and maintain the freedom of all who call themselves Americans. We honor them this weekend. Say a prayer for their family members. And why don't you one time look at heaven and say, thank you, God, for their ultimate sacrifice. Have a great weekend. Memorial Day, we're going to honor those folks. And then we're back in the saddle on Tuesday with not only our morning story and podcast, but we go right back in to TNN Live every Monday through Friday weekday from 9 to 11 o'clock a.m. Central Time. And we want you to join us. Until we get together again, folks, have a great weekend. So long, everybody.
From McAllen, Texas to Berlin, Germany, the universal language is truth on TNN,
the Truth News Network.